Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino. Elizabeth is the CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, a leading multimedia provider of lifestyle content. The Best Ever You Network, helping you live your life to the fullest. It's where you'll find inspirational and encouraging stories, advice, and information with our radio show, printed magazine, websites, community, and more. Real people, real advice, real places, real products and businesses, real life stories, and more, including real celebrity life. Be your best and keep it real, confident, successful, caring, and beautiful every day with Best Ever You. Now, here's your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino.
Well, happy holidays, everyone. We've got a really neat guest with us today. Many of you who follow the show know that every once in a while we do episodes on food allergies. And I have had food allergies myself for about 15 years now. Since I had my second son, I have been resuscitated twice. And I have anaphylaxis to peanuts, tree nuts, fish, and shellfish. And I always call myself the canary in the coal mine with respect to food. If there's something to be allergic to, I am allergic to it. So it can be a variety of food additives and things like that as well. So that's kind of where we come from with doing a food allergy show on the Best Ever You Network. There are a lot of people with food allergies right now. One in 12 or 13 kids right now suffer from food allergies, and it's becoming an epidemic of sorts, really. And who we have with us on the phone today is, I'm going to pronounce your last name. I'm going to try this again. Are you ready, Maria? We have Maria Ostevall. Did I say it right? I think she's with us. Hang on just a minute. Maybe I have to have her call back in. Hang on.
Here I am. I'm so sorry.
Did you have me on mute because you were afraid?
You know what? I was trying to put mute so that other calls couldn't bother us, and then I put myself on mute by accident. So I apologize, okay. But you said my name perfectly.
Oh, good. All right. Well, you know, it's a really big honor to have you with us today. You are the CEO of the Food Allergy and Anaphylaxis Network, and that is a you know, let's let you talk about the organization. Actually, it's a powerful organization for helping, you know, put legislative, you know, new things into law and all these things regarding food allergies. But also, it's such a safe place to go when you have food allergies. I love going to your website, and I feel like I am not alone anymore with food allergies. I used to, when I very first got diagnosed with food allergies 15 years ago, I felt so alone and so outcast. And now it's sad there's this many people with food allergies, but at least we have a place to go.
You are so right. And I have to say, taking this job, I've really come full circle, because the way I was first introduced to FAN, Food Allergy and Anaphylaxis Network, is about 8 years ago now, when my oldest of three kids had just a rush to the emergency room reaction to a little bite of a peanut butter cracker. And food allergies were a whole new world to me. And thankfully, a friend of mine sent me to FAN's website, and I right away became a member and, like you said, found myself in this supportive community and not feeling so alone and afraid and vulnerable like I felt initially. And I remember... Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I was just going to add to that. You're such a warm community. There are days when I'm doing my Best Ever You thing, I think, you know what, I should just apply for a job there because, you know, I fit in perfectly. I mean, that's how neat you guys are, and you're reachable, you're accessible. I mean, people really have this problem, and I can relate to your son 1,000,000%. It's a bite. People don't understand that it's a bite of food that you're allergic to, and it can send you, in my case, you know, dead and resuscitated. And I'm sure he was fighting for his life too.
It was my daughter, and she was
daughter. Sorry.
So that's okay. I've got a son. He's my little guy, and he's two right now. And we don't know if he is allergic to anything yet or not. Thankfully, he's been fine with milk and egg and wheat, you know, some of the other top culprits. We haven't tried the nuts or tree nuts yet, and I'm a little bit wary because he is the clone of his older sister with the allergy, and he's also shown some of the early warning signs. So he's already had eczema flare-ups, and he has environmental allergies, which are similar symptoms that we saw in our older daughter, but we didn't know that they perhaps could be some warning signs to food allergies. And with her, it was really a very scary moment when she had her first reaction before she was even diagnosed, because we rushed her to the emergency room and they gave her one dose of epinephrine, which is supposed to be how you treat, your first line treatment for an allergic reaction, and that first dose did nothing. Mm-hmm. And I remember just holding her in my arms. She had been vomiting everywhere, eyes swelled shut, red from head to toe, trouble breathing. And when I saw that the medicine they gave her did nothing, I panicked. I thought, oh my gosh, we're going to lose her because this isn't working. And they gave her a second dose within a few minutes, and then thank goodness that second dose took effect, and really within seconds I saw the relief and a slowing down of the symptoms.
Yeah, my hair on my arms is standing on end right now because I feel like I'm going to get ahead of myself. So it's going to be your job to slow me down, okay, Maria?
Because I often do that.
Story right there because it's happened to me. It's happened to people I know. We're missing children from deaths because of this type of thing.
Yeah.
And I especially know what you're talking about regarding the second dose of epinephrine because it can take 3 or 4 to save my life, especially as I've had a few more reactions and things like that. You seem to be you need more medication to help. Let's jump back for a minute and take a deep breath and get out of that moment for a second because I can feel, I know parents listening right now are like, this is my kid. And I want to go back to what founded in 91, which is a little bit before I was diagnosed with food allergies in 97. So even back in 97, the Food Allergy Network wasn't really what it is today exactly. What is it today?
Today, it's really an international organization of 20,000 or so members spread across the United States and even in other countries that come to FAN for the latest information on research, on how to educate those around us, on awareness, and on advocacy. So we are on the Hill, both on a national level and on a state level, trying to get good policy in place to protect kids and adults with food allergies. And I've been thinking recently about what we are going to focus on in 2012, and in particular with a walk program that we have, where we have over 42 walks all over the country, what it is that we're bringing awareness to. And the thing that keeps coming back to my mind is not another life to food allergies. You mentioned we're missing some kids to food allergies, and If I were to sum it up in a sentence, what we're all about.
It's to bake
good. Yeah, it's that.
It's eating a cookie or a cupcake or a pudding. Or it's not like some profound gourmet thing. It's take a bite of a Kit Kat or something and you're gone. And it's terribly tragic.
It's one mistaken bite. And that's it. Not even one mistaken meal. It's one mistaken bite. And then you can have such tragic consequences. And what really has stuck with me over this past year, I took over as CEO in June, and I had the honor of attending many of our walks, but I met a lot of families that had lost loved ones to food allergies. And one thing I heard repeatedly is, if we had only known before, if we had only known what we know now before. And that's what I see FAN's job as, is to get the word out so that everybody knows One, you know, how to avoid an allergic reaction, but two, what you need to do in an emergency situation.
Can you do me a giant favor? Can you
please
do that with every morsel and bite of energy that you have? Because
oh, you bet.
I want no one to go through what I've gone through for the past 15 mm-hmm. years. Mm-hmm. Because when I was diagnosed with food allergies 15 years ago, it was like all of a sudden I was a leper even. Nobody, mm-hmm. people were like, my dad even was like, I think you have epilepsy. We're going to take you to the Mayo Clinic and find out why you keep having seizures. And mm-hmm. I'm like, this is not a seizure. This is no blood pressure. This is profound gastric, mm-hmm. you know, problems. This is an inability to breathe. This is no seizure. This is something, and it's happening after I'm eating that. What could, you know, I eat everything. What could possibly be going wrong? And it took, like, being Dr. House myself.
I love that show, by the way.
Yeah, I do, but I'm Dr. House. I swear to God. You know, I didn't know all this stuff existed. And I, on my own, had to, by a process of purely tasting peanut butter or whatever, die. I better not eat that. Or I better, I'm allergic to almonds now, too, I guess, and cashews and things like that. And there were no 8 major allergens or, you know, nobody knew. And there... And in one reaction I had, I really died outside of a Starbucks in Minnesota. And when they got me to the hospital, nobody knew what was wrong, and they treated me like a drug overdose.
Until
an ER guy came, and I'm in a suit, you know, and heels, and coming in from a business meeting. And a doctor went, I could hear it before I was resuscitated. He goes, this is not a drug overdose. This is an allergy. And they switched everything. And
wow.
He saved my life. And but I remember vividly when I came to, and I was on my kidneys didn't function, and I was up on the floor with a machine clearing out kidneys, because, you know, your kidneys do screwy things when you have problems being resuscitated. And I can remember him saying, you need to join FAN and you need to join Medic Alert. You have food allergies.
That's right.
And those are the things that stuck in my mind. And I'm like, okay, I'm big fans of FAN and I'm a big fan of Medic Alert. And those are the two. Do you guys do a lot of stuff together? And not to just other medical jewelry or anything, but that was at the time in 1997 what was there.
Yeah, no, and I talk about the medical notification jewelry all the time, and it has played an important role in what we do to keep my daughter safe, and so much so, it was very cute. My younger daughter, who does not have any kind of food allergies or any kind of condition, for a long time was very jealous that she did not get a bracelet like her older sister got. And I had to, you know, explain to her why and the importance of her older sister wearing it. And it's one of those things that I think we get into some more difficulties when kids get a little bit older and enter into the teen years and don't want to call attention to themselves. And that's where a lot of our efforts go into having teens and young adults not be ashamed or embarrassed and have them understand the importance of them speaking up and letting those around them know what they have. Because if they were to encounter an emergency situation, they would need to rely on others for help.
Yeah, and, you know, that I got to chime in there, too, because that was the last thing that was going around my neck at age 24 or 23 or whatever I was. You know, I definitely wasn't going to put medical identification on me of any form. I carried it in my pocket for years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not something I hid it from my work. I didn't want to be fired. I all of a sudden had trouble. I had a fairly high ranking job trying to travel around the country and do all these different things, and was suddenly thrown into business dinners where I couldn't eat. All sorts of tremendous social difficulties with food allergies. And I can vividly remember this woman coming into my life in 2006. Her name is Gina, and you know her. She was at, you know, Gina.
Of course.
Yep, you know Gina. And she said, I was doing a beauty pageant, and, you know, I remember at the time I was doing it to to talk about food allergies and show people that you could wear this jewelry. And really, it was about me wearing the jewelry once and for all, too. Like, I can do this. I can put this on my arm, and nobody's going to make fun of me or notice it or anything. And, in fact, it might just save my life. And she said to me, would you like to be in my book? And I was like, you want me in your book? Why? And she goes, because you're an example to kids. Mm-hmm. You're an example to, and I wasn't even thinking about kids. I mean, I was thinking about myself going, how am I going to live and keep living with this kind of thing? Because my kids didn't have food allergies. And she said, because you're an example to kids. And it knocked me upside the head like a 2x4. I'm like, you dingbat, this isn't about you. This is about helping other people. And she put me in her book, one of the gangs.
I have that book. I love that book.
Yeah, that's
and
me
I
in
love
there with
Gina.
The crown and the banner and the medic alert. To show kids that you can grow up with food allergies and be any darn thing you want to be or do, and I'm almost in tears, and be proud of who you are. Because food allergies, they do many, I equate it kind of being diabetic in a way. They're both food problems. And anytime you have a food problem, tell me if I'm wrong, too. Chime in and interrupt me. Anytime you had a food problem, we're so built around food as birthdays and activities and celebrations and just lunch at school even or business.
It's so
meeting.
True.
It's
I mean,
so
our kids.
Socially. Yeah.
Yeah, our kids really have to kind of develop a little bit of an armor and a little bit of a thick skin. And I think it's one of the reasons why I think kids with food allergies are really amazing people. They're my heroes. They've got to go in and, you know, about once a week or so, whenever there's a celebration or something, just say, you know, I can't have that. I'll go. I'll get my own. You know, and they, I think, learn at such an early age to speak up and be strong and confident, and they perhaps learn lessons that we would prefer that they learn at an older age, but ultimately it has a lot to do with why they are such special people. And one other quick word about Gina is she is just a fountain of wisdom. And in my job and in my personal life, you know, we're at a point where I think I've got food allergies under control, and we manage them daily, and we know how to do it. But we all hit our low points at times, and we all hit just struggles that we weren't expecting. And I have to say, I have turned to Gina many times to get me over those hurdles. And every time I hang up with her, I always feel better.
Can you do me a favor? Can you talk a little bit more about Gina? And just I'd like it to come from you because I know all she does. But her websites and some of the places she writes and blogs and really what she does for you guys, because it's more than just a phone call. She's involved.
Yeah, she's involved.
She's
and I was actually about to.
Yeah,
I was actually about to make sure I mention her website, which is allergymoms.com. And she's got always some really interesting interview and tips, and in a way that is just so easy to read and enjoyable and from the heart. And, you know, besides being such a kind person, she is smart as a whip. So everything there is just right on. So I'm a big fan. I'm a really big fan of hers. And I think part of what comes through, and it's the same with me here at FAN, is that what we do for work doesn't feel like work. It feels just very natural and like we're doing the thing we're supposed to be doing. It just never feels like work. It feels really like an honor to be able to be doing the kind of activities we get to do in outreach and in advocating for the ones we love that have food allergies.
Yeah, it's... let me go back to Gina for a minute. She's definitely a force, and anytime I get a chance to further promote something that she is doing, I always do. I really try hard to to support her in any way that I can. And, you know, for example, we've had the Hom family on. We've done some different radio shows because of her. We're here with you because of her. Gina, we love you.
We love you.
Thank you for all you do, Gina. Because,
and the Hom family, we love them, and I am, it has been an honor to get to know them, and I am in awe of their courage and their ability to just put themselves out there for the good of the food allergic community after such a tragic loss of their son.
Yeah, and I'm leaving that right there because he was on the in the magazine. He's been on the radio show with us, and you know they're grieving, but they're helping so many people. Let's talk about epinephrine for a minute. They're helping so many people raise awareness for your organization, MedicAlert, and then also about carrying epinephrine because you know their son passed away because there wasn't probably any epinephrine in sight.
That's right.
And it was too late. And so it's one of those moments that you said early on in the show here, like if only I had known, maybe.
That's right. Well, he has said that to me before, and it's a lesson that I am just trying to hammer into my daughter's head because, you know, right now she's mostly under my care. She's 10, but she's going to have to grow up and go to college and be on her own. And that's why I always say to her, I don't care where you're off to. I don't care if you're late to your own wedding. If you have forgotten your epinephrine auto-injector, you come back home and pick it up because nothing is as important as you having that with you.
Yeah, that's how I wanted to make an impact with you, with Van. That was how when I have reapproached you all in the past, you know, like year and a half or 2 years of how I wanted to help. And that's because I've lived it for 15 years. And I really wanted to help teach children and teens how to grow up with this food allergy because I've grown up with it since about, you know, pretty young age, you know, the 20, 25 or so. And now I'm 42 and I've really dealt with these allergies for a really long time. And, it's not just about the schools, and I think you guys are getting a better read on this too with your teen summits and things like that. But people have to grow up with these food allergies, and I have a blog that I wrote, and I have no idea if it's any good or worthy or anything, but I sure wish somebody would take it and publish it because it's about what if one day the airline pilot that you're flying with has a peanut allergy. Or the place that you're working at, the CEO has a peanut allergy, or you know all these places. You know, it's not just schools that might need to be nut free, or a classroom that needs to be nut free. Right now, it's very school centered, but it's probably going to need to be more college, university, workplace, transportation, and so forth. Broader, as 1 in 13 kids has some type of food allergy. Do you agree with that, or is that way out there?
So I think my view on this is a bit nuanced. It's not just black or white. So let me start with the school context. I believe that restricting foods, especially that come into a classroom, say as opposed to a lunchroom, is one tool in our toolbox that we have to reduce the risk of allergen exposure. Mm-hmm. And I believe it's a valid tool, and schools need to consider what works best for them and in their context. And I believe that hand in hand with that goes learning the realities about how food allergic reactions happen and how we can best reduce the risk. So, for example, in, you know, a preschool where kids are young and put their hands in their mouth a lot and touch their face a lot, I think maybe it calls for restricting foods more than, say, in a high school where kids are much more aware. Mm-hmm. The follow-on to that is that, you know, in any setting, that foods are going to be freely available and you've got folks with life-threatening food allergies, you've got to know how to reduce that risk, whether it's by cleaning tables properly, whether it's by providing an opportunity for folks to wash their hands after they eat or wipe their hands with a hand wipe after they eat. You've got to take follow-on measures to make sure that your environment is safe for folks with food allergies.
Yeah, it's been, I got to tell you, it's why, one of the reasons why Best Ever You exists is because I have had just a terrible time working in any real work environment with food allergies, especially in the age of computers, shared computers, and things like that, where people are at their computer with a bag of mixed nuts or something like that, and they get on the computer and type.
Nuts are very greasy. Nuts are very greasy and oily.
Oily
so the
and
residues.
And, yeah. So you know, not to get off on a kick about in environments that need to be nut free or anything like that, but you can. What I'm trying to get at is not specific, but you can tell there's a broader issue on the horizon as these people. Children get bigger.
That's a theme. I do. I think that's a theme, too, that we've been thinking a lot about this year because it's our 20th anniversary year. Mm-hmm. And we've been hearing from a lot of families that have grown up with FAN. You know, FAN started when our founder, Ann Munoz Furlong's daughter, was diagnosed with an egg allergy, and she didn't have any resources. And there wasn't much out there when she started FAN. And the kids that were being diagnosed then felt way more alone than now because there wasn't this level of awareness. And we still have a long ways to go, but we've also come such a long way. And those kids that were in school then are now, like you said, in the workforce and facing a whole host of new issues on how you go on an interview dinner when you've got life-threatening food allergies and may not be able to eat at the restaurant that gets chosen, you know? And at what point do you bring it up when you're on a date? You know, all these very potentially awkward and personal issues.
Yeah, I mean, my husband, you know, my husband and kids, it's living in our house. I actually have airborne nut allergies, so I might be in a little bit different class with nuts. They are really airborne. I mean, my blood pressure will be in the hospital with almonds around me. You will crack open that can, and we're in serious danger.
Well,
so
you know,
airplanes
that's
terrifying.
Well, that's an important point, too, to clarify a little bit, because I think that there's sometimes people misunderstand a little bit. You know, when people say airborne, you definitely need the protein to be aerosolized, to be in the air, and then ingested, because, for example, the smell of peanut butter cannot cause an allergic reaction. Odor is different than airborne protein. When peanuts are cracked open and the dust is in the air, that can cause a reaction. So you really need the protein particle to be in the air and to be able to be breathed in and to penetrate that mucous membrane in your nose. I don't want people to be overly scared. And I had that experience personally, and I don't know how my daughter got this idea, because she was only 3 years old, but we were at the playground, and I was pushing her younger sister on the swing, and she ran over and she said, "Mommy, the little boy over there is eating peanut butter, but don't worry, because I held my breath." And I thought, wow, you know, and I think she didn't say held my breath because she was too little. She kind of held her breath, showed me, and she said, "I went like this and didn't breathe." And that was a wake-up call for me to say, okay, I need to teach her to be very respectful and vigilant of her allergies, but I also need to teach her that she doesn't, that she can breathe, you know, so that
you know,
that she can't take it.
I will tell you something, though. I'm going to disagree with you just a tiny, tiny bit, just a slight bit, and it's not proven or anything, but it's my experience. I am really deadly allergic to these things, and when somebody does open up a can of peanut butter around me and I don't touch it and I don't eat it and I don't do anything but smell it, my blood pressure will I get very, very dizzy from the smell of it. My system has seemed to change. I don't know if I'm one to study or something. We'll move on off of this too because this is mostly irrelevant. But just so you know, because I'm having a chance to talk to you, my sense of smell has changed. And when I seriously smell something, like can really, really, really smell it, I'll get dizzy, and I know I'm allergic to it. It's very bizarre. Mm-hmm. It happens with perfume, like strong, strong perfume. It can happen with candles, the wrong scented candle, and it definitely happens with peanut butter.
Mm-hmm. So interesting. I don't know. Yeah, we have to talk to a doctor to see what's going on because I also wonder if your body knows and has developed some kind of, I don't know if it's an anxiety reaction or what, but your brain knows that this substance can really cause you a lot of harm.
Yeah, but the last time we did it, I didn't even know they had opened it. And I'm like, wow, I can really smell that. And woo, I'm getting dizzy. And it was weird. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I don't know what that is. But so interesting. Kind of an interesting thing. But I do hear that sometimes from older people with food allergies that they definitely, their sense of smell has changed a little bit too. So who knows what it is. But I do want to talk, I want to move off of that a little bit because it's, sorted to the call. But a good point. I want to talk about just you for a minute and talk about the wealth of experience that you bring to FAN as well as your education because you're really smart. You were giving Gina some credit there, but holy cow. You're from, like, Duke University, and you have a law degree from Yale, and you didn't just suddenly become the CEO out of the blue of FAN in 2011 for no very good reason. Can you talk about a little bit of how you've been involved and, just your background and the things that you bring to the table?
Sure. Okay. This is a radio show, so you can't see, but I'm totally blushing right now.
And
I feel very fortunate that my career has taken this path because I honestly can't think of any other job I'd rather have than the one I have right now. I started off at Duke. It was interesting. I was pre-med. I did all my pre-med requirements, and I was going to go off to med school, and then for some reason that I can't quite recreate now, who knows, I was young and perhaps impulsive, I ended up going to law school and had a wonderful time in Yale Law School and practiced law for a while. And then as a lawyer, I realized I needed to know more about business to be a better lawyer. So I actually worked at a consulting firm for a while to learn and hone my business skills. And then I worked at an internet startup of all places that is still doing quite well. And I feel really like all these experiences taught me some important things that I now bring to this job. And the way I got started in food allergies was on a very personal way. My daughter was going to preschool, and I was terrified because of her allergies. She actually had that incident we had talked about earlier in the show about a month before she started preschool.
Oh, how
so she
fun
wasn't,
for you. Nothing more mommy crazy than that.
Yeah, and she wasn't even 2 years old yet. She was going to turn two about a month or so into preschool. And she has this reaction. And I considered, pulling her from the preschool. And the reason I didn't was a little bit selfish, was that I was pregnant and about to have my second. And I thought, I need a little bit of help with this little one so that I can tend to the baby, and I would like to have her go to preschool. And so I met with the teacher, and I realized that they really needed a little bit more education. And so putting together my consulting skills, like a good management consultant, I put together a PowerPoint, a slide presentation on food allergies and what every teacher should know about food allergies. And friends of mine learned that I had done this and then started asking me to come to their schools. And before I knew it, I was getting asked to talk to teachers in a lot of schools. And I thought, this is a real need out there to have a person who's knowledgeable and passionate and can communicate these key ideas in a way that's accessible practical, and in a way that tells people of the risk but also doesn't scare them into inaction, because the last thing we want is terrified educators that don't want a food allergic child in their classroom. And so I started a nonprofit called Safe at School Partners that was dedicated to just educating our educators. And it was through my work there that I first met several people that then led me to FAN. And I joined FAN in 2009 as their general counsel and as the administrator of their research program. So before taking over CEO in June, I had actually been at FAN for almost 2 years.
Yeah, what I love about this story, too, is sometimes CEOs, they go from job to job to job with no real personal care or, you know, really to the job. You know, it's just a job. And this isn't, like you were saying, this isn't just a job to you. It's part of your life and your world. And I think that message is really, you know how things come from the top down sometimes? That message is coming through loud and clear from your organization through every single thing you're doing. I don't know if you know that or not, but you can feel it now when you get materials from you or when you interact with people like Jen Roeder and things like that at FAN. You know that it's a family. It's really a neat thing. It's hard to
You have made my day. That's really the highest compliment you could have paid me. So I really appreciate
that. That's good. Yeah, you know, it's true though. You can feel it. It doesn't feel stiff. It feels like a family. So you know, that's just neat. Especially, you could probably do anything. You know, you're a lawyer and you're Yale trained and Duke trained, and you could probably have your pick of what you wanted to do.
I don't know about that,
cool.
But I am just so happy to be
good.
Able to do this, because it is very personal. It is very personal. It's my life. It's what I live, and it feels personal. You know, trying to make life easier for people with food allergies is what I want to do. And, you know, my daughter Nina is always behind that.
Yeah, and we've got people in the chat room. And Nikki is with us today, and she wants to know, how can somebody determine if a child has a food allergy? Would you like to answer that?
Sure. That's a great question. And
we also have a caller, too.
We work. Oh, go ahead.
I'm going to pull the caller. Caller at 478, I'm going to pull you on the line, but can you hold your question for a minute, and we're going to let her answer this one first. We're going to take some calls now.
So
there we go.
So FAN works with some amazing doctors, and they are really some of the world experts on food allergies. And what I have heard them say over and over is that the diagnosis of food allergy is an art and not a science. So there are different ways that an allergist goes about it. The first is to take a detailed history. And then the second very important part are allergy tests. There are skin tests. There are blood tests. And together with the history, they help you determine a diagnosis. And the third part of that, or the third piece of this stool, if you think about a stool with three legs, there's different things that go into this diagnosis. The final one, and what everyone says is the gold standard, is a food challenge. So it would be controlled in a doctor's environment where someone is fed a small amount of that food, and to see if they actually have a reaction, a clinical reaction. The reason this is important is that the test that we talk about, the skin prick or the blood test, you can have false positives. So you can show a marker for an allergy on these tests, but be able to safely eat the food anyway.
Yeah.
And so when you've got a gray area in those tests and in the history, then an allergist might recommend the gold standard, which is the food challenge. Now, if you take the example of my daughter, for example, her history was so strongly indicative of a food allergy to peanut that we really didn't even need the other test, even though she did get a blood test. But, you know, her history was she took a bite of a peanut butter cracker, she had horrible symptoms, and we rushed her to the emergency room, and epinephrine saved her life.
We're good.
And she got her blood test, and her IgE levels were above 100. So yeah. In that scenario, we don't need a food challenge. In fact, it could be very dangerous.
That's me too. They're like, you know, I reacted from the skin test. I mean, they had to treat me in the office just with the skin test alone.
You know, that's so interesting because our allergist said I wouldn't do a skin test on her because the reaction you have described was so severe that I don't even want to do a skin test. But a short answer of all that is you should go to a board-certified allergist.
Yeah. All right, let me take this call. And I can't tell if it's somebody listening or somebody just with an actual question, but caller at area code 478, did you want to ask Maria a question?
Yes. I had food allergies as a child for eggs, but I thought I'd grown out of it. But when I was pregnant with my first child at 31, I had a bad reaction to peanuts. And so they didn't test me until after she was born and everything, but I have multiple food allergies. So that is a real big challenge for me. And I only found one doctor that was willing to do a food challenge test on me because I was trying to see what I could get away with eating safely, you know. So my question is, should I go and get food allergy testing for the stuff that I tested positive with the blood test? And my second question is, how can I educate those around me in order to keep myself and my kids safe?
So let me answer your first question. But let me first ask you a question. What did they do a food challenge to, and what happened?
Well, the only one they did was to wheat because they were only going to do one at a time, and it was after my third child was born. And when I was getting ready to go do the additional one, I found out I was pregnant with my fourth. So.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. What a lovely family.
Yeah, so I did have a reaction to the wheat, and what it is I had an asthma attack.
Okay.
And my first reaction that I had when I was first pregnant with my first was to peanut, and I had, like, the whole body itching, you know, inside on fire kind of feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So I just totally avoid those, but I've actually experienced an asthma attack by someone next to me eating a peanut sandwich.
Yep. So I would say this is an area where I have to defer to a doctor, and I would just recommend that you find a really good one that you trust. And I wouldn't try, you know, food challenges at home if you think that there may be a problem. You know, at the same time, when you're talking to your doctor, please bring up and keep in mind that a positive on a blood test doesn't necessarily translate into a clinical allergy, meaning that you wouldn't necessarily react. And a doctor can guide you on that depending on the level of IgE for each and every food and getting a real specific history from you on what has happened in the past when you have eaten these foods.
You sound a lot like me. You sound like me with four kids and food allergies.
Well, the funny thing is, I'm the one with the food allergies.
Me too. Yeah, they don't have any food allergies. It's just
totally
me.
they're milk intolerant. All my boys are milk intolerant. But I typically avoid the food allergies that I'm allergic to with them, so that especially at least until they get older, so that I don't.
Are your four kids all boys?
The first is a girl.
What a lovely family.
Oh, congratulations on a beautiful family. And the one thing I would add to advice might be to make sure that you do have life-saving measures with you. In other words, if you really do have food allergies and so forth, have the doctor write you a script for epinephrine so that you have it in case you do really have a bad reaction. And then you might want to keep Benadryl as a second line of defense as well. You know, because food allergies, in my experience, food allergies, like if you had that one reaction to peanuts, if you come in contact with peanuts again, you might have a second or subsequent worse reaction where you might be needing epinephrine and not have it.
Right. I actually had to ask the church to not serve peanut snacks to the kids because I couldn't go into the children's area to pick up my kids because of the peanuts in the air.
Yeah, I have that kind of thing too, like volunteering in my kids' classrooms and things like that. If one of my sons is placed in like a classroom where it's not nut-free and things like that, that year I tend to not volunteer and things like that. So, yeah, I feel for you, and I hear that baby. Oh, so cute. But did that answer your question okay?
Well, I guess I didn't quite catch. How do I educate those around me in order to help keep me and my kids safe?
Because
a lot of people are just not educated, so they are like oblivious to what, like some people think, oh, you have a reaction, you're going to have a little rash, it's not a big thing. They don't understand that it can go from, oh, I have a little rash, to, oh, I can't breathe, to, oh my gosh, I'm dying. you know what I'm saying?
It's such an important point, and I think you educate people one person at a time and one conversation at a time. And just know that after every single conversation you have, you've just made the world a little bit safer for everyone with food allergies. And I think the best way to do it is just be very direct and matter-of-fact and evidence-based, you know, because we don't have to exaggerate. We've got enough with the reality of what it is and how serious it is. And just be very straightforward. I think also one point is that the word allergy hurts us a little bit because people's connotations to the word allergy are, you know, itchy eye, runny nose, and that's it, not something life-threatening. And so I think you just have to be very upfront about this, that, you know, one mistaken bite could have very serious consequences up to and including loss of life. And a lot of times when I talk about my daughter, I say that she's anaphylactic to peanuts. The word anaphylaxis conveys the gravitas a bit better of the situation it is than we're talking about.
Well, on that note, anaphylaxis, I've never had, an anaphylactic reaction, but that's like one of my hidden fears, I guess you'd say.
And
I mean,
as it should be too, because you know it sounds like there's a history of allergies going there. And I think Maria's advice, and we're gonna run out of time here a little bit, and I'm gonna take the show back to Maria. But I think she's gave you just I love the way you put things, Maria, with finding just a really good allergist in your area and doctor that you can trust. And then also following through with those people around you in your immediate circle, especially, you know, like maybe like I do, use me as an example there, or maybe Maria, like your family even, with creating a safe environment for you where you don't have to worry that they're, you know, that you're going to be, you know, ingesting peanuts or, you know, that type of, or wheat or things like that as well. Does that help?
Yeah.
Maria, did you want to add anything before we keep going?
No, I think that's the best way. Unfortunately, there's just no easy, surefire way to educate everyone all at once. I wish there was. But I think we've got more and more disciples, you know, every day, because once you teach someone and they learn, then they teach others by their examples. Some of the people I've been most moved by are moms who don't have kids with food allergies, but who can empathize and who will often do the heavy lifting for me, whether it's chaperoning on a field trip or making sure that the treats that get brought in are safe for everyone in the class to share.
Yeah.
Can I add one more thing?
Please.
Another issue that I think is maybe quite peculiar is I'm allergic to wheat and soy, and I've come across a lot of that contact in beauty products.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a whole other show that we're probably going to have to do. Somebody actually just
really
wrote me on
but
that
that's
this
right.
morning.
You've got to read the ingredients even on beauty products. And one of the things I always say in my talks is food is not the only source.
Thank
the food we eat is
up.
Not the only source of a food allergen.
Right. With my nut allergies, I have, and with your daughter, you'll have to watch for this too, Maria. Almond oil is, I don't know if your daughter's allergic to almond oil, but almond oil is in everything. Beauty. It's hidden in so many different things. And I've nearly died with beauty products, too. What a great point to bring up beauty products. That is a can of worms, however, with 9 minutes left in the show. We're going to have to do another show on that one. I hope that you call in for. But that is a wonderful point. This isn't really, while Maria's the food allergy and anaphylaxis network, it really could be the food and beauty product anaphylaxis and allergy network, because there are a lot of allergens in beauty products. And Maria, they're not labeled, are they? And caller, I'm gonna go ahead and let you go, and thank you for calling in, and we're gonna finish out the show. Thank you so much for your participation. It means a lot, and I wish you good health.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
That's such a great point, and another one that's related to that is the use of some food allergens in medicines. And the law that we're all used to, which is called FALCPA, the Food Allergen Labeling Consumer Protection Act, which went into effect in 2006. So it's signed in 2004, but went into effect in 2006. That only applies to the food that's regulated by the FDA, so our packaged foods. But beauty supplies do not come under that. And the mandate of that law is that the top 8 food allergens need to be labeled in plain English on the ingredient list.
On anything where there's an ingredient list. Now, can I ask you a personal favor? And it's a
of
funny
course.
Personal favor, and it's going to be live on the radio, and if I'm not supposed to ask this, then, oh, well, I'm doing it anyway. You do me a favor. Since you are who you are, and I bet you know the people at M&M's, could you try for me?
I do know the people, and the people at M&M are wonderful folks. So tell me your request.
Okay.
I bet you I've already delivered this request, but go ahead.
Dear M&M people, we love you, and I miss my M&M's. Can you please make me some M&M's that at the bottom of the package do not say may be processed in a facility with peanuts? Can you make me a package of M&M's that are
peanut? So I have delivered
please.
That very request, and I
please,
did it not.
M&M people.
Not but 2 months ago. And I think they are trying, and if there will be a way for them to do it, and they're working on it. They're a wonderful company, and it's complicated. That's what it is. It's complicated.
They're so big, and all the lines.
They're really big.
They take
food allergen issues so seriously,
and
the safety of their consumers so very seriously.
Yeah.
But you have just delivered that message in a very strong way. And so I think that will be hopefully coming down the pike.
I just thought that would be fun with you because they're awesome. It's such a cool company. It's everything. And I'm little old me, and who cares really? I'm so old. But I think of all the little kids who are missing. If you have 1 in 13 kids with food allergies, how many kids is that? And let's say a bunch of them have peanut allergies.
It's almost 6 million. It's almost 6 million kids now in the U.S. with food allergies. And if you average that out, that's almost 2 in every classroom. So it's staggering. It's really staggering. We've turned to, in our life, a lot of the dedicated allergen-friendly companies like Vermont Nut Free Chocolate or Divvies or Enjoy Life, and there's many more. So I don't want to get myself in trouble by only naming a few.
No, you're not. This is us.
Good.
Yeah, no, we aren't promoting or plugging or dissing or doing any of that. We're just being us, and We're all good. There are a lot of things coming. Okay, we have 5 minutes left, and yesterday in the mail came this beautiful magazine with a lovely note from you on it, and I'm like, that's so cool, but I'm mad because I want to write for it too. But you guys have a new partnership. If I use partnership wrong, sorry. But,
No, that's wonderful. They are such a wonderful magazine. But go ahead, finish what you were saying.
It's an Allergic Living magazine, right?
It is. And I have to say, I was so happy when they came to the U.S. because they started off in Canada, and I used to subscribe to them when they were just a Canadian publication, mm-hmm. and they are now both a Canadian and a U.S. publication, and Gwen Smith is lovely, and their publisher Peter is lovely, and they just do so much for families like ours that are managing food allergies.
Yeah, I that came in the mail. I'm like, that's so cool and timely because we're getting on the phone with you, you know, today. But the magazine was beautiful quality, great information, and, you know, I see my familiar faces in there. And so it makes me happy. You know, my husband's like, you know what, that's so cool. And he looked at me and he goes, and you didn't have to start it up.
Probably glad for that. He's probably like, another project that is, you know, that you're passionate about. But, you know, it really is. It's like receiving, I belong to a local support group for a long time, and Allergic Living is like receiving my support group friends in the mail, where I can just go and read, and it really is a much anticipated arrival in my mailbox. And I love the quiet time to go and read it because every single article speaks directly to my life.
Yeah.
But it's in a fun way. You know, like you said, it's high quality, appealing, beautiful pictures and graphics. So it manages to make a very serious topic fun in a way, enjoyable to read.
Yeah, I was proud. I was also proud that it wasn't, sometimes you get, you come across allergic blogs and things like that, and they're like, oh, poor me, I can't eat cookies anymore because they have nuts in them and things like that. And what I loved about the magazine also was that it had real recipes and not just baked goods. It had real things and ideas and so forth to be able to eat because, you know, it's important. While a lot of us can't eat a lot of processed foods, which are not that great for you anyway, so it's kind of a blessing in a way. But they have some really good recipes in there too. So I thought that was pretty nice, kind of refreshing.
So I can't speak to the recipes because I am a horrible cook.
That's
you
all right.
Do not want me in anywhere close to a kitchen.
I thought they did a great job with really putting some real things that you would eat for dinner and things like that, because so often you get allergy information and it's like, how to make your pie nut-free. And I'm like, well, but I need food, not...
Right, I need food, not just a pie, right?
Pie. So it's pretty funny. All right, we have 2 minutes left to talk with you, and I've got to close the show too, but is there anything other than opening giant cans of worms that we haven't talked about that you wanted to talk about, mention? Maybe this is a good time for membership information about FAN.
That would be so lovely. Thank you for bringing that up. We are a membership organization, and our membership costs $50 a year, or you can buy a lifetime. And I wanted to make a plug, not only because you get great information and a DVD and just other things with your membership, but because we need you. We need to be able to count your voice in our membership numbers. You know, we know that there's an estimated close to 15 million Americans with food allergies, and so there's no reason why our membership shouldn't be a million or so people strong, and it makes a direct impact in our work. I've been recently doing a lot of visits on Capitol Hill trying to get a school epinephrine bill passed, which would allow schools in all states to have an epinephrine that isn't directly specific for one child, meaning it would be a generic epinephrine. It could be used in any emergency. And when I go and I talk directly to legislators, and they really listen, but when I can say I've got, you know, this many thousands of people that I am speaking for, it makes our case so much stronger.
Difference.
So
yeah.
if all of you listening who are...
We're going to run out of time, and it's going to cut us right off. So I'm going to take that back right there from you for a minute. And what I'm going to do on that note is follow up in our community on that epinephrine bill for the schools. So I really wanted the show and that to go hand in hand so people can really see some of the things that you're doing. And then I'll put links to your membership, too. How's that sound?
That would be wonderful.
Perfect.
Thank you so much.
All right. We've got 10 seconds left. So, Maria, thank you. Food allergy, thank you. Gina, thank you. Caller, thank you. Jen Roeder, thank you. We love all you guys. And thank you very much for joining us today. We are
And happy holidays to you and your family.
Happy holidays to you, too. All right. Take care, and I'd love to have you on the show again.
I would love it.
All right. Thanks.